This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey everyone, just FYI, Scott's audio was a little cranky in this episode, so he doesn't come through quite as clearly as we'd like, but the episode is really good stuff. You'll want to listen all the way through, okay? On to the show. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. You can find me on Twitter at DanHarris80. With me is Mike Tagliere. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Tagliere NFL. Mikey Mike on the mic. What's going on?
Oh, nothing much, man. It's I can tell it's week one of the NFL season because I woke up at 2:45 this morning and I started working. I mean, this was not by design. I don't want to sit here and tell people that I get up at 2:45 in the morning, but so much is on the mind. And I want to be ready for week one.
Well, while I am shifting into week one mode, I have a very big thing going on later, and it is my 7-year-old son's first fantasy draft. I'm very excited about this. It's the Fantasy Bros Kids League. And, we did a couple of mocks on our mock draft simulator that we've got. And I got to be honest, if he doesn't go Brady, Gronk, Edelman, Amendola with his first four picks, I'm going to be completely shocked. I'm hoping that constant D's and D minuses he was getting from the draft wizard on the grades is going to smack him into, sort of like maybe that's not the best strategy, but whatever, man. He should take whoever he's going to root for, and it's going to be my nightmare as we take all former or current Patriots player. But anyway, that's a story for another time. Let's get into today with us. Is just one of the best guys in the fantasy football community. It's Scott Fish. You can find him on Twitter at ScottFish24. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be on. I'm much like Mike this last week. I feel like I'm getting up earlier and earlier just to get some things done. It's kind of fun and exciting though too, You're putting in the extra hours.
Yeah, and especially all the culmination of all the offseason work. Let's just go. Let's go. It's time now. It's time to go. So we're going to get go. Look, usually during the season, our Monday show is going to be a waiver wire show. Obviously, it's not a classic waiver wire. Right now, we haven't had any games, so we're going to do more of a little stash or drop show today. Fringe players rostered in maximum of 50% of leagues or less, and we're going to try to do way less. We're not going to do a crazy deep dive into everyone. We're going to try to touch on a lot of players as we go into today, but we'll talk about their outlooks and whether or not you should be rostering them or whether or not they're really just not worth it at this point. Then we're going to finish with a quick mailbag. Is that good with you guys?
Sounds like a blast.
Sounds great.
It's good. Now, to be fair, it really didn't matter if it was good with you guys. That was just me being sort of conscientious as a host. We were going to do that anyway. Okay, before we get into the show, let's discuss some news that happened this weekend. That is Adrian Peterson signing with the Lions. Look, we knew DeAndre Swift was dealing with some injuries coming into camp. Wasn't sure if he was going to be ready for week one. That looked like a bigger role for Kerryon Johnson earlier in the season. Now Adrian Peterson comes in. Scott, do you want to roster any of these Lions running backs, or how do you see the situation breaking down?
I feel like it's much more of a mess than it was a couple days ago. I feel like by the end of the season, I still feel like Swift is the best option they'll have And I do think that they're going to run the ball a decent amount. The problem is game script. I mean, are they going to be behind a lot and have to go away from the run? And does that mean guys like Swift are going to be in the game more to catch the ball? I guess mostly I'm just happy to get a better discount on Swift and have him for later in the season. But Peterson's going to get his. Don't think that it's not in his mind that he went somewhere where he thought he was going to get some work. And he also went somewhere where he's 1,000 yards behind Barry Sanders on the all-time rushing leader list. And he's playing in Detroit. That's going to be something interesting to watch later in the season if he gets close. But I'll take Swift at a little bit more of a discount now.
How about you, Tags?
I want to avoid this if possible. And it's kind of like the same thing with Josh Jacobs, where we had Lynn Bowden traded to Miami. And people are like, well, if you were that concerned about Bowden, you're doing it wrong. And that's a terrible way to look at things because there's a funnel effect on the rest of the roster, right? And Adrian Peterson coming in, not only does he lower the floor of these players, he lowers their touch floor because Adrian Peterson does not sign with a team if he's not guaranteed some touches, as Scott was talking about. So he's coming in, and not just that, but he's still one of the best goal line backs in football. Like when you get on the goal line, you get inside the 5-yard line, you want to hand Adrian Peterson the ball. DeAndre Swift was a guy that I thought was really good at everything in college. I didn't think that he was truly elite at anything. I just felt like he was very good at every facet of the game, and that's why he was a top three running back in this class. But clearly, he's missed training camp for quite a few weeks now. Kerryon Johnson can't seem to stay healthy. So this is a team under Matt Patricia. He's shown the willingness to go back and back to veterans. So even going back to LeGarrette Blount, he was getting touches in this offense. So I do anticipate Adrian Peterson taking a big chunk. So he cuts that floor down, and he cuts the ceiling down, because this was not a team that you were expecting to score, 15 rushing touchdowns or anything like that. They're not the Saints. If they get 10 to 12 rushing touchdowns, I'd consider that a good season for the Detroit Lions. And if Adrian Peterson gets 6 of them, well, what are you looking at for DeAndre Swift or Kerryon Johnson?
That's a good point.
Yeah, I actually still have 3 drafts left before the season starts. So when I'm looking at it from that perspective, Swift is the only guy that I'm personally willing to really take a shot on. And that is drafting him, expecting to not be able to start him at all for at least the first 6 weeks or something like that. It's more of a stash down the road where you hope that eventually he kind of breaks out and the Lions realize that they need to turn to the future a little bit, give him more work. What about Deebo Samuel here? He, there were rumors he might start the year on the PUP list. He has avoided that, but it's not all that clear, other than you see videos of him running and stuff like that. It's not all that clear that he's going to be ready for week 1. Scott, if you haven't drafted yet, or even if you have, what are you expecting from Deebo Samuel at this point?
Man, the fact that they didn't put him on that and it's only a 3-week IR this year says they think he's going to be pretty dang close to ready, but I wouldn't feel comfortable starting. This is one of those that you see every year with lots of players. I'm not going to feel comfortable starting Deebo Samuel until I actually watch him play and watch him out there on the field. So week 1, it's not my thing. I definitely think he's stash worthy though.
Yeah, Tags, I assume, we've talked about it a little bit, you're in roughly the same place, right?
Yeah, he's not starting on the PUP list, which is fine, but it doesn't really get it. Remember AJ Green last year where it's like, oh, is he going to start on the PUP list? No, doctors were telling you he's going to be ready by week 2. Doctors are telling us that Deebo Samuel's not going to be ready by week 2. So it's like, why are we projecting him to start? This is not what did he have, 80-some targets last year? It's not like a can't-miss player. Like, A.J. Green was a can't-miss player. So I don't want to reach for someone like Deebo Samuel right now. Obviously, if you've already had your draft, you're going to keep him on your roster. But he's not a guy that I was reaching for in drafts because early in the year, you just can't afford to keep those roster spots tied up.
Yeah, this is kind of my outlook, too. We talked about it last week. Fade the injuries a little bit as much as you can because you really don't want to, tying up roster spots too much. And also Jones fractures are notoriously just, you have no idea what you're going to get with them. So even though he avoided the PUP list, he's still not somebody who I'm looking for to draft if I haven't drafted yet or to start early in the season. All right, we're going to get into it in a second. But first, let's talk about our monster giveaway, which has closed. We said it was going to close at 7,000 reviews on Apple Podcasts. For the podcast, we told you guys that because we were close, we would keep it open for the weekend. We ended at 7,120 reviews. That's awesome. Now, because it didn't close until 11:59 p.m. last night, we have not yet drawn the winner's name. We will do that today, and then we will announce it tomorrow. But guess what? We are not waiting. It is time for Monster Giveaway number 2 already, even before we have settled on the winner. Almost the same exact items as before, except instead of a signed Davante Adams helmet, it's a signed Clyde Edwards-Helaire helmet. That goes along with the $200 gift card to Pristine Auction, the $200 gift card to Porter Road Butcher, a package of fantasy football goods for your league's champion and your last place loser from Trophy Smack, and a one-month subscription to Fubo TV. Go to fantasypros.com/contest. Fill out the form there. All you need to do is leave an honest review for the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Submit a screenshot of that review through fantasypros.com/contest. We are running this through September, okay? But if you want a bonus, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. You will get an extra $100 credit if you win the contest and you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, an extra $100 credit to Pristine Auction. Also, today's podcast is, as I said, talking about dropping or stashing players. You know what helps with that decision other than the brilliant Scott Fish and the mediocre Mike Tagliere? The waiver assistant over in my playbook. Import your team. It identifies the top players available. You can view the percentage of experts who would add that player to your roster. You get a detailed analysis of how it's going to impact your team. You hear me in tags talk about things like the draft assistant, my playbook all the time, because we use it. We actually use it because it's an invaluable tool. The waiver assistant is just one of the many helpful roster management tools that we offer. And if you're an MVP or Hall of Fame subscriber, for example, you get access to the autopilot tool that sets your optimal lineup without you needing to do anything. And our multi-league assistant that helps you see what players are available across all your leagues. If you want 6 months free of our Hall of Fame package, that is our highest subscription package at a $65 value, just go to fantasypros.com/offers. Trust me, you are going to want to do that before the season starts. All right, guys, let's start here with running backs. Darrell Williams, okay, he is going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire's backup after DeAndre Washington was cut. Look, that's on me. When this first came out, I said, who did I think was going to be the backup? I mean, I assumed it was going to be Washington, to be fair, because I think they knew what they had in Williams and they specifically signed Washington. But now he's out. He could have a bigger role, especially early. You know, Edwards-Helaire is a rookie. Who knows how it's going to go? He's just 22% rostered. What do you think here, Scott? Darrell Williams, stash or drop?
This one, if Clyde gets injured or anything, Darrell can be a top 20 running back in that offense. So I would like him at the bottom of my roster as a stash, but I understand dropping him too.
Yeah, my guess is that they'd probably sign Devonta Freeman if something happened to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That just seems like what they're doing, like with the veterans bringing in like guys like, you know, Spencer Ware, bringing him back, LeSean McCoy, and going through this madness. But I definitely think Darrell Williams is a stash. Once that happened and they cut DeAndre Washington, it said everything that we've been hearing out of camp was that Darrell Williams was flashing in camp and that he looked tremendous. And he's been on the roster for a couple of years now, so I'm not worried about him stealing Clyde Edwards-Helaire's thunder or anything like that. He might get some goal line work and steal some touchdowns, frustrate fantasy owners, but in the end, he's a clear-cut handcuff to, you know, one of the top, if not the best offense in the NFL.
Yeah, he's a stash for me too. If you are a running back and you are going to get touches for the Chiefs, you should be rostered. That's the bottom line. And right now, given the roster, if they signed Devonta Freeman, who I guess, again, we'll talk about this in a second. He went to Jacksonville. He does not have a deal. So sounds like maybe that won't go anywhere. But if they signed a veteran running back like that, I'd be less excited. But for right now, given what the roster looks like, I definitely want to stash Darrell Williams. By the way, Scott, I want you to know that this so far is making me feel really good because I chose these names as to be like borderline guys. And before we talk about any of them, you take this big sigh as you think about whether or not it's a stash or drop. So that makes me feel good, which is how I felt about them. And I was like, I don't know. That's how I felt. So I just want you to know that already this is going well because I feel good about this. All right. Well, here about this. Instead of a single running back, let's talk about a situation here. And that's everyone who is currently rostered to play running back for the Jaguars, other than Chris Thompson, whose roster percentage has gone way up, obviously, since the Leonard Fournette release. But let's talk about the three other guys. You've got Rykel Armstead, who has been placed on the, you know, the COVID-19 list right now. We don't know his status. Ozigbo's there. Robinson's there. There's some buzz right now about both of these guys, particularly Robinson. So do you want to stash any of these guys, Scott? And if so, which one is really more of your target?
Armstead, this is his second time on the COVID list, and he had a groin injury all in this preseason. That's a lot of stuff going on there. I think for me, it's probably Robinson with the pass catching work. If I'm going to stash any of them, I'm probably just completely avoiding the mess, though. The Robinson pass game work kind of intrigues me because I feel like this Jaguars defense is terrible and they're going to be behind a lot and they're going to need to be passing a lot. And that's why if... The other point is the rumors out there are Fournette was let go because of the way Robinson came along, and that makes me a little more optimistic there. I honestly think I'd probably avoid them all, though.
By the way, bringing in Devonta Freeman,
why?
Why in the world would... Now, again, he left without a deal, so it doesn't sound like it's going to happen necessarily, but I don't know why you would do that given what this is. Tags. I mean, look, Robinson is 5% owned right now. If there is a guy for me, that'd be the guy I would stash. What do you think?
I actually think Ozigbo is the guy. And the reason I say that is because he's the better early down back of the two in terms of what he brings to the team. And it was like the whole running back unit. The reason they said they felt they can cut Fournette was because the whole running back unit, they said they felt looked good. Although Reichwell Armstead has never been there. So like in terms of camp this year, you know, he's been on the COVID list, as Scott said twice, dealing with another injury too. So it clearly wasn't him. So they're impressed by both Ozigbo and Robinson. But the thing is, Robinson, that pass catching ability that you're talking about, Chris Thompson's got that job. So basically he's a handcuff to a third down running back, which doesn't present much upside to begin with. We know that Chris Thompson came with Gruden for a reason, right? Like, he's going to have a big role in that offense. I don't think any of them are sexy, but if you're in a position where you drafted Leonard Fournette and you don't want to start him in the first couple weeks because it's going to take him some time to earn that starting gig, you could start someone like Ozigbo in a pinch, and he's going to give you somewhat of a floor because he is going to be the early down back. It's not sexy at all. He's not going to carry you to a championship, but he can play a role for the first couple weeks if you're looking for
a running
back.
Can I change my answer to just no? Because there are like 10 plus guys who are going to...
No, we don't allow that. We don't allow that, Scott. I'm sorry. No.
Those three, so not even Robinson for me, as I think deeper.
All right. Well, look, I mean, Scott, you're Scott Fishbowl, man. You've got, you know, a million teams, a million roster spots. You know, Robinson's got to be owned in a league like that.
I have them all in one, I'm sure.
No, that's fair. Look, again, you know, I think Tags, your description of Jaguars running backs not sexy is probably the perfect term that we can kind of use to discuss it. It's not really a situation that you want to target. Again, there is going to be a huge negative game script. The running back that benefits most from that is Chris Thompson, who has already been on the roster. So it is somebody who, if I have to choose somebody, I would choose Robinson, just because, again, from the beat writer's perspective, it does sound like he's been the most impressive. But either way, it's not really somebody who I want to go after. Let's go a little higher here. And it's a guy who, you know, we haven't talked about that much this offseason. He's rostered in nearly 50% of leagues. So he's a higher guy. And that's Duke Johnson, 47% of leagues. You know, you thought he might have the big role last year. The Texans added Carlos Hyde right at the end. And then Hyde turns out to be the guy. Johnson only had 127 touches. Now you have a running back in David Johnson, who they gave up major capital for and does, you know, factors into the passing game, which is really where Duke Johnson kind of makes his money. So what do you think, Scott? Is this a guy who, you know, do you roster him anywhere? And if so, do you think he's a guy that you stash?
This is a tough one. I'm doing that sigh again.
Let me be clear. The sigh is not a negative thing. The sigh is a positive thing. So do it every time, please.
He's a guy that probably needs to be owned everywhere, just in case David Johnson goes down. The problem is I don't see much value in him outside of David Johnson going down, because Deshaun Watson passes to the running back one of the lowest rates in the league and has for years, even when they got Duke Johnson. But Duke did have about 60, 62, something like that, targets last year. So he's going to get his, you know, 3 to 4 targets a game. I just don't see him very startable unless DJ goes down. But if DJ goes down, there's just a lot of opportunity there. So I feel like he should be stashed. I just don't trust him in any kind of a starting role.
What do you think, Tex?
I like Duke Johnson to have on the bench. I actually think he fits this offense better than David Johnson at this point in their career. Duke Johnson has done well anytime he's been given a chance, but he's never going to get the chance. Like, let's be honest about it. He's never going to get a chance to be that guy without like an injury in front of him. And this is a case where there's literally no one else in the roster. Their number three running back, I think, is Buddy Howell. So there's really no other competition here. And David Johnson has been prone to injuries throughout his career. And not the last time we saw him on a football field, he looked like he was toast. Now, I'm not saying David Johnson's done. Offseason can do wonders for someone, but again, I don't think he fits this offense very well, and Duke Johnson obviously knows it. He played in it last year. He's been efficient with the touches he's been given, and I guess I just hold out hope that Duke Johnson will eventually be given, you know, let's call it even 12 to 15 touches per game, because if he gets those amount of touches, you're going to start him in a flex every week. So I say hang on to him for right now. I think he could help in a pinch, especially during bye weeks, and if something were to happen to David Johnson, they really just don't have anybody else on this team.
So let me phrase it like this, I guess. If you are in a real roster crunch, okay, I know what the idea would be like. Well, you want to roster all these guys. But if you're in an absolute roster crunch, would you rather roster somebody like Duke Johnson, who might offer a little bit of standalone value and offers the handcuff value, or one of the other really high-end handcuffs that we talk about, a Tony Pollard, Chase Edmonds? Scott, if you had to choose between dropping, let's say, Tony Pollard or dropping Duke Johnson, who are you dropping? Who are you stashing?
I'm dropping Duke Johnson. I think Tony Pollard has top 10 running back potential if anything happens with Zeke. And I'm probably one of the weirder ones out there that I think Tony Pollard is going to dig into Zeke's touches more than people think this year. I can see him garnering a whole lot more touches with how good he has been with him. So I'd rather have Pollard.
How about you, Tex?
I'm also going to go with Pollard on this one.
All right, let's move on to another situation where, you know, we just don't exactly know how this is going to unfold, and that's with the Chargers. You've obviously got Austin Eckler leading the way, but you've got the two quote-unquote backups, or the two guys who are going to mix in a little bit. That's Justin Jackson. He's rostered in 18% of leagues. Joshua Kelly has been rostered in 10% of leagues. There's some minor rumblings about a toe injury for Jackson right now. I haven't seen anything major on it, but it doesn't sound like it's going to threaten necessarily his week one availability, at least last I read. So of these two guys, I will be honest, I have rostered Joshua Kelly everywhere. That is the guy that I've been targeting. I think he's not only the handcuff portion of it. I mean, I think they'd split, but I think he'd get more of the work. But I think he's going to factor in more early. So, Scott, which of these guys, if either, are you stashing or are you just dropping both of them?
I have Joshua Kelly everywhere, too. It's the only league I think I didn't get him in is that CBS Analyst League. We're in tags where he got sniped the pick before me. So everything I see sounds like Joshua Kelly is... Anthony Lynn just loves Joshua Kelly, and that he's going to be that backup there, and he's going to get a role even with Eckler in there. And if anything happens to Eckler, I think it's Joshua Kelly's to take. I want him everywhere. Justin Jackson, not as much. I've also seen the injury stuff that you've seen, and personally, I just think he's going to end up being the third back there.
How about you, Dax?
This is going to be a mess. I mean, it just feels like it's a mess of a backfield. I would say Joshua Kelly's the one that I would rather have as well. And I think the injury is what tilted me that way. Obviously, Justin Jackson having some experience in the offense, playing well when he's been given the opportunity. And part of me wondered, it's like, can he be the Raheem Mostert this year? Like a guy that's been extremely effective when he's been given opportunity. It's just he's never gotten a bigger workload. And they go and they draft Joshua Kelly, and it's like, oh, but then he suffers an injury. So, yes, I'm okay to hold either of these guys, though, to be honest with you. And the reason I say that is because you need guys like this on your roster that you can find out exactly what you have in week one, and you could either cut bait or you could hold on, because one of them is going to have value. You're going to find out probably right away. If Joshua Kelly's in there, you know, getting goal line touches, if he's, you know, playing 30 plus snaps per game, and Justin Jackson's the clear cut number three on the running back depth chart, he's droppable. Kelly's someone you hold on to. So I think both of these guys are rosterable.
All right, before we move on, I want to tell everybody about ButcherBox. You ever go to the grocery store, you pick up some chicken or beef, and you cook it for dinner that night, and you say, what have I done? Now, sometimes for me, that's just because the dog ate my son's Legos and I cooked everything too long. But it's also because the meat you buy at the grocery store, sometimes it's just low quality and off flavor. And it's never humanely raised, it's expensive, and the grocery store is crowded. And just, no, there is a better way. And that way is ButcherBox. Every single month, ButcherBox sends a selection of high-quality meat right to our house. Every box has between 9 and 11 pounds of meat, which is enough for 24 meals. The price works out to like $6 a meal. Everything in it is packed fresh, it's delicious, with no antibiotics or added hormones ever. They have boxes you can select from, or like us, you can customize it to get more of what your picky kid is going to eat. And they have free shipping nationwide except for Alaska and Hawaii. It is really awesome. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that my wife is obsessed with ice cream, so it is really important to her that we eat healthy otherwise. So we do a ton of the wild-caught Alaskan salmon and free-range organic chicken. And now my pants fit better and I feel good. You know the best part? New members can get ground beef for life. 2 pounds of ground beef in every box for the life of your subscription when you go to butcherbox.com/fantasybros. 2 pounds, ground beef, free, for life. Insane. butcherbox.com/fantasybros. That's butcherbox.com/fantasybros. All right, let's go a little higher end here. And let's talk about Boston Scott. Still only 43% owned, which I take as a personal insult. Look, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast. He obviously closed the year really well when there were injuries abound for the Eagles, about 88 yards per game over his last four. There are still plenty of injuries right now for the Eagles. They didn't sign a backup to Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders has been dealing with this vague lower body injury that apparently will not threaten his week one availability. So what do you think here, Scott? Are you stashing Boston Scott or maybe even starting him, or are you dropping him?
Yeah, for all the reasons you mentioned, I'm stashing him. I mean, he was really efficient and good in the pass game last year. And I feel like with all the pass game options that are currently injured or dealing with injuries or going to play injured or won't be playing, that his 8.5-9 yards per catch last year is going to really, really play in well for it. The Sanders injury is obviously good for him too, but his upside is, you know, 12 touches a game, even if Sanders is in there, because Peterson historically has used a lot of splits. I'm on the leaning that Peterson is going to, you know, for the first time, go a little more towards his, you know, towards his main great back. But if not, I mean, he's historically split. So that's what you're going to bet on with Boston Scott.
Tags, we've talked about it. You're rostering Boston Scott and stashing him, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually looking at it right now because I already started writing the primer for week one, and I was trying to find the stat that I had. I want to say that running backs average, there it is, 32.1 touches per game against Washington last year. And that was the most in the NFL that running backs averaged. And if you have Miles Sanders coming off an injury where he was missing a couple weeks in camp, even if you give him a workhorse role, let's call it 20 touches. That's a big role for someone coming off a multi-week injury. And then you have Boston Scott as the clear only other back in that backfield. That's 12 touches. And he's going to offer flex value in those roles because he does catch passes out of the backfield. You could think of him like a guy that you can get much later than James White, but deliver similar results and maybe in what might be a better offense, to be honest with you. So Boston Scott is actually, I felt like he's undervalued. I don't know if he's ever going to offer you like league winning upside or anything like that, but I do believe that he's someone that you could have on your bench, or even, you know, if you're playing a deeper league, let's say you're in a 14 team league and you need to plug in a flex, I think Boston Scott can do that in games that you're going to project the Eagles to throw a little bit more.
Yeah, 43% is dumb. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be way higher than that, especially when you've got, you know, Jeffrey is not going to play week one. Rager is not going to play week one. You've got the injuries to the offensive line, which is probably going to mean that Wentz is going to need to dump off a little more. I think Scott is definitely going to be a guy who you can start, especially in the early weeks, and he offers some handcuff value. Let's finish up here with a little deeper on the running back, our last running back. That's Jerick McKinnon. There is a lot of positive buzz about McKinnon during camp this year, which is great to see. He obviously has not played a regular season snap with the 49ers, despite signing 2 years ago. Crowded backfield, as we talked about, only 11% rostered, so not a huge deal. But what do you think, Scott? Is McKinnon a guy that fantasy managers should roster, or should we just drop
him? Yeah, it's a little too, even for a for an offense that runs the ball a ton and shares the workload between running backs like that, I just can't. It's a little too deep. There are other players I'd rather have rostered. It's also one of those things that I know that they said he looked good and stuff, but I hate when I see spark scores and combine metrics for Jerick McKinnon thrown out there, because I watched him in Minnesota. He had lost quite a few steps, even though he still flashed. Once a player's in the NFL for 3, 4, 5 years, stop using pre-NFL metrics. Yeah. Just stop it.
Right.
It's yeah. No longer relevant, and it's honestly no longer accurate. But honestly, he's just a little too deep for me. I'd probably be dropping.
Same with you, Tex?
I don't. So he's one of those guys where you're going to find out week one, and it's going back to those teams that need someone to plug in. Like if you drafted Leonard Fournette, again, I keep going back to that, but there's some guys that are going to be missing a starting running back that they drafted thinking that he was going to be the guy. Even maybe like a Ronald Jones, if you don't want to play him now that Leonard Fournette's there, you can grab someone like McKinnon and kind of see what you have, because they are a team that's really missing a lot of pass catchers. I'm not even interested in what he's going to do on the ground. I don't think he's going to do much there. He might get 5 carries per game, but I think he's going to be involved in the passing game enough to deliver some actual useful fantasy numbers. And you could find out week one. Again, you're going to find out right away what you have. You can cut them, you can do whatever, because everybody gets talked up in camp. It's all about those snaps, what we see in week one. It's just weird because we haven't seen him on a football field since 2017. So as Scott mentioned, he is not the same player. He's really not. So they could talk him up all they want. I do think it's weird that they didn't cut him during this entire time, because I felt like they were going to cut him after the first injury because that contract was just terrible. But they've held on to him this entire time, so I think they really want him to work. So I'm okay to hold him, at least for week one.
All right, guys. So let's move on here to wide receivers, and we're going to start sort of at the top end of the rostered percentage and work our way down as we get into it. So let's start here with Alan Lazard. He's 44% owned. Packers open with the Vikings. You know, no offense, Scott, but not the absolute strongest pass defense necessarily coming in this year. The Lions, the Falcons, I have a pretty decent the Packers early schedule against pass defenses. He should be the number two. I know MBS has gotten some buzz. So what do you think here about Alan Lazard? Is he a guy who you want to stash?
No offense taken at all. I'm going to guess even in our industry, 75% of fantasy analysts can't name the Minnesota Vikings cornerbacks at this point. So our safeties are great, but our cornerbacks, nobody, they're not good. So I'm probably stashing because he's the number two in what's likely going to be a good offense. It's going to score 370 to 400 points this year. You know, it's if he stays the number two is the question, but I think this falls along for me with Jerick McKinnon, like why Tags would hold on to Jerick McKinnon. I want to see if Lazard is really the number two in week one, and I want to hold on to see if that happens, because if he's not, if somehow Robert Foster gets in there and he takes or the Marquez Valdez-Scantling talk from Rodgers comes true and it's them, then I can drop him. But if he does end up being that number two there, I would like to hold that.
Tags, you and I have constantly fought over who of us can be higher on Alan Lazard. So I assume
you won that
guy,
one.
I do win that one because I'm insane. I get it. I assume this is a guy who you're stashing, right?
That's of course, yes.
Yes. Okay, good. We don't need to go into it too much. Let's go into the next guy, though, Jalen Reagor. This is nothing about his talent. Of course, we all, everybody kind of loved him coming out of college. It was a good situation with Alshon Jeffrey looking to miss, but he's got the shoulder injury, which sounds like a separated shoulder. He's not going to have surgery, but sounds like he's going to be out until at least week three, maybe week four. I mean, can you stash a rookie that long, Scott, or is it somebody who you drop? You hope he's available when he comes back.
The problem is his upside's so huge, but honestly, he's going to have to play hurt with that throughout the whole season. I feel like it maybe it's just my history of shoulder injuries that tells me it's going to be a long time that he's going to, and NFL players that have had the same, similar injuries have dealt with it all season. Like I like him just enough to stash him, but I have no problem with people dropping him. It's when you're going to miss multiple weeks and you already have Sanders and Scott and Goddard and Ertz who might be the top four pass catchers in that offense. I get it. I get dropping him.
Yeah, he's 36% rostered right now. So that's lower than I expected, actually. I expected fantasy managers to be stashing him a little longer. Tags, I mean, you talked up Reagor all offseason before the injury. What do you think?
It depends on how deep your bench is. If you play in a league with like five bench slots, you can't hang on to him. You just can't do it because there's going to be a lot that comes up in the meantime, and you don't want to miss out on some of those big waiver wire hits. If you play in a league with, eight bench spots, I'm holding Reagor. Because think about it this way. The NFL bye weeks don't start for a few weeks, right? So it's the guys that you have locked into your starting lineup, you're most likely going to be relying on those guys unless there's an injury. And in that case, then you might have to drop Reagor because you need to pick up someone. But for the most part, your starting lineup is your starting lineup for the first couple weeks because we have to start spotting trends as NFL weeks take place. So right now, I'm not in a hurry to drop him. The situation reminds me a lot of Odell Beckham. I'm not saying that he's Odell Beckham, but basically when Beckham had that hamstring injury and he missed the start of the year, everybody dropped him. And then it came to the point where people started picking him up once he was about to come back. And then we all know what happened from there. He blew up. So Reagor has a path. Well, he had a path, I should say, to 100 targets in this offense, but it is starting to look a little worse because they're expecting Alshon Jeffrey to, I guess, be ready by the end of this month, which did they take him off the PUP list? I didn't know if I missed that this weekend. There was so much news going on.
He's off. Yeah,
that does lower the ceiling a little bit because obviously if he's healthy, if DeSean Jackson's healthy, Zach Ertz is healthy, Miles Sanders is healthy, and then all of a sudden you're looking, okay, it's not as looking as good for Reagor. So there's so many variables with this one. I want to hold if I can, but I don't think it's necessary that you do.
Yeah, I drafted him in a ton of leagues, and I have kept him rostered in one, and that is the Scott Fishbowl. Because that's right, that's the big one. That's the big rosters where I can afford to stash him, because it's not like I'm going to be replacing him necessarily with anybody too great. Other than that, standard size leagues, I just don't think he can. I get the upside, but he's not somebody. So for me, he's a drop. All right, before we keep going, it's football time, which means it is DraftKings time. Your season-long drafts are probably over, at least winding down by now. It is time to start building some new teams each week on DraftKings. Billions of dollars. That's how much DraftKings has paid out since 2012. $8 million. That is how much is up for grabs this weekend across all of DraftKings contests. You know how pumped you get when someone on your fantasy team scores a touchdown? Multiply that by 1,000 when you have that player in your DFS lineup. You know how to play by now, right? You pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, you enter as many contests as you want. And again, millions, millions of dollars up for grabs every single Sunday. This week, $8 million right there waiting for you. And this is the time, okay? If you have not signed up yet for a DraftKings account, this is the time, because for a limited time, when you download the DraftKings app and you use the code FANTASYPROS, new users can get a free shot at $1 million top prize and compete for the over $8 million in prizes. Do not miss the extra special week one bonus. Again, that is code FANTASYPROS over at DraftKings. Free shot at $1 million top prize with your first deposit. That's code FANTASYPROS only at DraftKings. Go make it rain out there. Minimum $5 deposit is required. Eligibility restrictions apply. Go see DraftKings.com for details. Let's go to a guy who's been creeping up in the percentage of leagues that he's being rostered, because there are good reports on his health, and that's Preston Williams. Recovered earlier than expected from his torn ACL. He looks good. 21% target share last year, more than Devontae Parker when both were on the field. Parker is dealing with this injury a little bit. Sounds like he'll be okay for week one. But what do you think here with Preston Williams, stash or drop, Scott?
I don't even believe this number. What percent of roster did you say?
39%.
That can't be possible.
It is true.
Okay. This isn't stash. This is, he should be owned everywhere. And with Fitzpatrick now named the starter, there's places I would be starting him still. I know it's a tougher week one matchup, but I mean, he was awesome last year. He's been unstoppable in camp. Xavier Howard says he's bound to be a wide receiver one in this league, and Xavier Howard would know. He should be rostered everywhere. This is almost ridiculous to me. It's even on the list.
Okay. Well, can I tell you what I honestly think, and then Tags, I'll get to your opinion, which I assume mirrors Scott's. My guess is, there were all these thoughts in the offseason that he was not going to be ready for the start of the season because he was covered from the ACL. His recovery has gone faster than expected. He was probably not drafted in as many leagues that drafted a little earlier, and they just haven't gotten around to fixing that issue after the drafts. Tags, you agree, right? Williams got to be owned, got to be stashed.
I have him as wide receiver 46 in my draft ranking, so clearly he should be owned. He's a wide receiver 4.
Okay, good enough for me. Let's go to the Colts receivers. I'm glad Yates is not on this podcast. Yates has very strong opinions about all the Colts pass catchers. Michael Pittman Jr. owned in 28% of leagues. Paris Campbell rostered in 20% of leagues. Pittman, obviously the 34th selection in the draft. Big receiver, should factor in at the goal line. Paris Campbell, he is now out of the concussion protocol, which had held him back a little bit. He dealt with injuries last year, but he's very talented, very fast. So what do you think, Scott? Do you want to roster and stash either Pittman Jr. or Campbell, or are both drops?
Wow. Yates and I are the complete opposite on this. You should wish he was on this. Because
yes. I am the complete opposite, too. So I'm glad you're here to sort of do the work.
No, it's just that I don't have hugely strong, like sometimes in this industry, we just don't have strong takes on some players. And these are two that I just don't have strong takes on. I look at Philip Rivers' history with his second wide receivers, and he's had some okay numbers, but they're not a huge amounts of targets or touchdowns that have ramped them up and stuff. And there are guys, I guess I want more. I understand holding them, but these aren't guys that I'm holding at the end of a short bench.
How about you, Tex?
I definitely want Campbell. Again, this is one of those situations where Yates and I have talked about it. He's big on Pittman. I'm big on Campbell. And we're going to find out in week one, right? It's one of those. This is one of those clear cut situations
when Zach Pascal is the guy.
No, it's funny. No, I've already written up this game. I've already gone through it. So I promise you that. So Campbell isn't affected by Zach Pascal, as far as I'm concerned. I think that it's Pittman that's competing with Pascal, and I think Pascal might actually steal more snaps in week one. Now, the Colts do go four wide a lot more than other teams in the NFL do, but Paris Campbell has that clear-cut slot role, like that Chester Rogers role they've had, and obviously he's better. Phillip Rivers loves those targets over the middle of the field. Jack Doyle is just a guy. We know who Jack Doyle is, right? I mean, he's going to be fine, but Trey Burton is not going to be active for the first couple weeks, apparently. So it's like you're missing those targets over the middle of the field. And Paris Campbell is someone that I want on my fantasy team. I really do at the end of my bench because, again, if he hits in week one, everyone and their grandmother will run to the waiver wire and grab him because, oh, this is the guy they drafted in the second round. He has draft pedigree. He has all this. Oh, he's faster than T.Y. Hilton. He's bigger than T.Y. Hilton. Wait a minute. What? We all know this already. So it's like, be one step ahead. You're not starting him right away, but you're going to find out exactly what you have in week one.
Yep. No, I would like to stash both of them. I mean, I like the Colts offense a lot this year, but Hilton is the primary guy. I don't know. Yates fades Hilton, but buys the other two receivers. So we can all talk about that.
Well, he has Pittman over Hilton, right?
I know. Forget it. We're not going to go. We could have an entire podcast about the way Yates feels about the Colts wide receivers. But yeah, I agree. I would stash both these guys. I agree with you. Campbell's a guy who I am really kind of getting pretty excited about. So I agree. You stash them. They've got a soft matchup against Jacksonville week one. So you really, you know, that's sort of something.
And then Vikings and Jets after?
Yeah, that's fine. I talked about the Vikings. We can talk bad about the Jets, my Jets, but that's fine. They're both guys who I think, in my opinion, we should stash. Let's go to another kind of duo here, and that's the Carolina wide receivers, not named DJ Moore. You got Curtis Samuel at 34%, Robbie Anderson at 32%. Panthers are going to be behind a lot. Samuel was kind of the Swiss Army knife last year, held down by poor quarterback play, but he's apparently had a bad camp. That was a recent report that he hasn't looked impressive. Anderson has basically dealt with Jets quarterbacks for his entire career, which means he has rarely seen a catchable target. He now gets Teddy Bridgewater, who doesn't throw deep all that much, but when he does, it's usually pretty catchable. So what do you think? Do you want to, Scott, stash either Curtis Samuel or Robbie Anderson?
This is really annoying because I actually like both players, but Anderson isn't a great fit for Teddy's game. And Samuel, as you mentioned, it's mostly bad news coming from camp. It's probably a situation, I guess, if you're doing stashing the Colts secondary receiving options, why not stash Carolina's, I guess, and see what happens week one, week two, etc. But these are guys that I guess I can hold them at the bottom of my bench, but I'm just not super enthusiastic about right now.
How about you, Tex?
Robbie Anderson is the one I would want of the two. I'm not going to go out of my way to draft either of them because, again, I think it's the hardest offseason for a team to have a brand new, like an entirely new coaching staff come in, work with a brand new, it's not just that, but a new quarterback as well. You have new receivers in the offense. Curtis Samuel, I'm staying away from. Like, I don't want any shares of him. He's a guy that people hold on to because they think of what could have been, what should have been. When you hear those negative reports out of camp, those are the things that you want to pay attention to because everybody looks good in camp. Robbie Anderson, I don't think you need to hold on to him, though. The reason I say that is because he's not someone you're going to want to start on a weekly basis. He's going to be a bye week guy where it's like you're looking for a ceiling. You know the Panthers are going to fall behind in this game. You're looking for 40 plus pass attempts. He is the number two option in that offense as far as I'm concerned. So I think he should be owned in more leagues than Curtis Samuel. But I think there's guys out there, like we've talked about, Alan Lazard, Preston Williams. These guys should 100% be owned over those guys. I would rather own Paris Campbell as well.
What about the guy who replaced Robbie Anderson with the Jets, and that's Breshad Perriman?
He should be on the waiver wire in every single league.
Well, I didn't even get a chance to do the pitch.
Doesn't even matter. It's the Jets. It's the Jets, first off, under Adam Gase, and Breshad Perriman has a knee injury that's swelling up every couple days. He says it feels better, and then it swells up. And Scott, just tell Dan, because he's trying to bring up a Jets player, just like shut him down real quick.
Yeah, I basically had the same. I had drop. I can't see holding on to him. And really, very many players in this offense, except for one we might talk about later that, you know, is interesting, but only if you have enough bench spots.
Okay, first of all, Jameson Crowder is very interesting. Okay, we're not going to talk about it, but that's my guy.
Crowder could see 130 targets. he might see a lot.
He is 22%, Breshad Perriman, 22% rostered. The reason I'm sure more than anything is the knee injury that, like you said, Tags, is kind of like, oh, I feel good. Then you practice once and it swells back up. His MRI is clean. He's not on the PUP list, so he could contribute. But I agree. There are one, for me, it's Crowder, maybe two pieces of the Jets offense that you, well, forget about Bell, of the receiving game that you might want to get. And the answer is not Rashad Perriman. So I'm also with the drop. Let's get to our final receiver, just 7% owned, and that's Chase Claypool here. Ordinarily, you'd think this is like just next year. You're not really thinking about Claypool at all this year. Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson, James Washington, and even Eric Ebron, who's had a really good camp reportedly. But Claypool has gotten a little buzz in camp right now. Is he a guy who you want to stash, or is he not even worth rostering?
Yeah, for me, he's not worth rostering right now. I know he's gotten the buzz, but he's just too buried. And now the buzz has shifted to Ebron. So like it seems like all of them except for Juju has had positive buzz during this camp. He's just a little too buried for me right now.
How about you, Tex?
Yeah, I don't want any Claypool. No, it could be a Saints situation. Remember the Saints would always have those wide, like Robert Beachum and those guys like would just pop up from time to time and have a big game. I feel like that's going to be Chase Claypool and people are going to think Henderson. That it's a big thing. And in reality, you don't want him.
Yeah, this is one where the positive camp reports doesn't move the needle. You know, it's just there's too many obstacles for him to be fantasy relevant. All right, let's quickly go to a couple of tight ends here before we finish up on quarterbacks and then get into a couple of questions from our mailbag. Let's start with Jack Doyle, 32% rostered. Look, he was good without Eric Ebron last year. I mean, he had a 20% target share. Reich system features the tight end. Trey Burton is hurt. They open against Jacksonville. So he's the primary guy, by the way, when I really wait on tight end and I want to sort of have somebody ready to go for week one, I'm there. But do you think he can provide seasonal value? What do you think, Scott? Stash or drop Jack Doyle?
Your tight ends have to be in a pretty bad spot for this to be your seasonal. I'm starting him many, many times during the season. Type of tight end. I'm with you on week one, and I'm with you with the Trey Burton out, but it sounds like Rivers and Burton had such a connection that in a few weeks, this might be more split than we want it to be. I probably wouldn't hold on to him unless it's just, you know, a week one flex or something.
Tags, I if I recall correctly, at some point, because we had a rankings disagreement, you had Doyle as a borderline starter in 12-team leagues, didn't you?
Yeah, I still think he's going to be fine. I actually think he's going to finish as a top 15 tight end. I don't think he's ever going to be sexy. It's like this unsexy pick. It's almost like Jason Witten last year, remember? Where every week people are like, why do you have him ranked as a top 15 tight end? I'm like, because he's boring and he always finishes there. He doesn't need a touchdown to finish there either.
And he plays almost every single snap when he's healthy.
Exactly. And that's where I think Doyle's going to be. And he's boring, yes. But if you're looking at, like when you're streaming and if you take the waiting approach, you can grab Jack Doyle and then you can grab an upside tight end like a Chris Herndon and or a Blake Jarwin. And then obviously you could choose whether depending on your matchup, if you feel like you need to play it safe or you need the upside that week. But kind of it's almost like the quarterback thing where you're looking for those guys. You're looking for a one safe option and one upside option. And then ideally you're just going to drop the safe option because your one guy broke out.
And that's exactly why I think he's fine to play and then drop, because everybody thinks he's unsexy and he's usually sitting there on the waiver wire for the weeks that you want to pick him up and use him.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jack Doyle may be an unsexy play, but Chris Herndon is the sexiest of plays, as we basically all alluded to. He was supposed to be a big breakout last year, and then 16 snaps between suspension and injury. He was targeted deep down the field. He had a pretty high ADOT. He's had a very good camp. There is little competition, as we just talked about, for targets other than really Jameson Crowder in that offense and obviously Le'Veon Bell. So what do you think here, Scott? Is Herndon a guy who you stash and you see if he pops after week one or two?
This might be a little biased because he's a guy that I grabbed in the fourth round of rookie drafts a couple years ago. And then that first year was like top 25 all time for a rookie tight end. And I just saw all the possible potential. I don't love owning Jets this year, but they're going to have to throw. So they're going to have to, you know, make offense happen somehow. So this is a guy that I will hold on to later in case the hype is right.
They're going to have to make offense happen sooner or later. That's the one thing I want to take away from this podcast. No, Adam, I hate tying myself to Adam Gase, but with tight ends, team scoring doesn't matter as much as it does to other positions. And Sam Darnold, if he's told us one thing over the course of his career, it's that he loves targeting his slot receivers and tight ends. Even Ryan Griffin had a couple usable weeks last year when he came in to take that place. And knowing that, you know, again, Rashad Perriman dealing with this knee injury, Denzel Mims missing the majority of camp, Jameson Crowder is going to get targeted, sure. But this is a team that could move on from Le'Veon Bell. Maybe they trade him around the trade deadline or something like that. So Herndon's a rare tight end that you find in the later rounds that's like available in most leagues. that has a he has a chance to get like 90 targets, which is really rare to find on a tight end that's, you know, owned in half leagues.
Yeah, final tight end that I've also tagged, you and I have talked about, a guy who I try to, you know, if I wait long time, I draft two tight ends. One of them is almost always Dallas Goedert. He's a little bit more rostered than these other guys, is 59%. Eagles targeted their tight ends 235 times last year. Now, obviously, that was in part due to all the injuries to their wide receivers. But again, he's a guy who not only can he provide, I think, kind of borderline tight end one value on a normal week, but if Zach Ertz were to get hurt, he becomes a top five tight end. So do you think Dallas Goedert, Scott, is a guy that fantasy managers should be stashing or dropping?
Yeah, and honestly, it's not just last year with the tight end targeting due to injuries. I mean, even back to when Trey Burton was the previously mentioned, Trey Burton was there. They targeted the tight ends just a ton in that offense. I think Goedert had, 87 targets last year, and he missed a game, and he you know, mixed in. He wasn't like a full-fledged starter all the time, but they do play a lot of two tight end there. Yeah, he should be rostered everywhere. It seems weird that there are 40% of leagues that don't have him rostered. But yeah, he's one that if Ertz does go down, he's like a top 3, 4, 5 tight end. So you, not only does he have the floor of being targeted 70, 80, 90 times this year, he also has the upside of being a top tier tight end.
How about you, Tex?
Yeah, it's a rare handcuff tight end situation. And but if Alshon Jeffrey's healthy and if DeSean Jackson's healthy, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult for Goedert to be on the field enough to make a fantasy impact. And do we really handcuff fantasy tight ends? It's not to say it can't pan out, but it's almost like you're betting on an injury to Zach Ertz. And I don't know if I want to do it. Should he be rostered? Probably in most leagues, I guess. Because again, it's coming back to that whole idea to have one upside tight end and then one that's going to be a consistent. Like if you have Doyle and Dallas Goedert and you basically wasted no draft equity to get those guys, yeah, that's fine. It just depends how deep your bench is. Because again, if you have 5 bench spots, I'm not going to roster a backup tight end.
All right, let's quickly go to quarterbacks here, because again, it's not a position where you're, you know, if you're in a single quarterback league, you've got the top 12 guys. Maybe somebody takes backup tags. I know you've advocated that this year. But what about a guy like Ryan Tannehill? He's rostered in fewer than 50% of leagues, 49%. You know, he's obviously, from week 7 on, he was the QB3. He was, of course, ridiculously efficient. So I'm a little surprised that fantasy managers aren't targeting him more. Do you think Tannehill, Scott, is a guy that you should stash, or is he just probably not going to do it this year?
I think you got to stash him. He's got the Broncos, Jags, Vikings early on, which isn't terrible. It's actually good in some respects there. And what he did in the back half of last year, it doesn't seem repeatable at all. But what if it's like a high percentage of repeatable? What if he's like 70, 80% of that? What if this is actually legit who Ryan Tannehill is in this offense? I think it's worth grabbing him just to find out if that's who he is. And you might have, you know, a top 10 starter right there.
How about you, Tex?
There's other quarterbacks I'd rather own. And the reason I say that is because if you own Tannehill, that means you're probably taking the streaming approach. If you're going to carry two quarterbacks, yeah, that's fine. You can keep him on your... Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm definitely okay with keeping him on your roster. But it's the idea of Daniel Jones. The reason I'm not going to own any Daniel Jones in leagues where I draft one quarterback is because you have to look at that week one matchup. They're going into Denver to play against Denver. I think the Denver defense is actually underrated this year. I think they're going to be a good unit with Bradley Chubb back there on the defense. There were just so many injuries that Vic Fangio dealt with last year that I think affected everything. So that game has a total of 41 as the over under. It's one of the, it might be the lowest scoring game on the slate. The Titans are projected for like 20 points in that game. So you could let him go unless you're going to carry two quarterbacks. But if you're the type that you're just going to stream and you're just looking for a late round quarterback, I don't think that you want to roster him as your only quarterback.
A guy who I am rostering as my second quarterback when I do want a backup or an upside option is Gardner Minshew. He's 26% rostered. I think that's probably all my leagues. We've talked about him a lot. High floor rusher, a pretty decent deep passer, at least by passer rating. He doesn't have the strongest arm or anything. Plenty of weapons, tons of negative game scripts. There's nobody threatening him for his job. So is Gardner Minshew, he's got a guy that you want to stash, or is he a guy who's not worth rostering?
Just a moment of clarification. As this whole segment is called Stash or Drop, when I mention Ryan Tannehill in the last part, and when I talk about Gardner Minshew here, I'm talking about them as stashes where they're not my week one starter. they're clearly sure. my number two. Is it worth stashing them as my QB2? So when I say that with Ryan Tannehill, I say the same with Gardner Minshew. His offense is going to be behind, or his defense is going to lead his team to be behind all year. His rushing floor is gonna really factor in well for him as a fantasy quarterback. And we saw a lot of really good fantasy games. We saw some bad ones, but some really good fantasy games out of him. I feel like he's got just enough weapons in the receiving game. And honestly, the running game might be porous enough. He's going to have to pass. And Chris Thompson is a good pass catcher too. So I'm probably stashing him.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I have Gardner Minshew ranked one spot ahead of Ryan Tannehill this year. So I'm drafting him ahead of Ryan Tannehill personally.
I mean,
19th and 20th. So I'm not going crazy. But if I am taking one as an upside QB2, certainly in two quarterback leagues, but an upside QB2, if I've waited a long time, maybe I've got somebody, Ben Roethlisberger or somebody like that, who's a little questionable. I want a guy with upside. Minshew is the guy I go for over Tannehill. How about you, Tex?
Yep, I like Minshew. He's a guy that in like two quarterback formats, he was one of my favorites all offseason, still is. Even if you're looking for a week one streamer, I think he's going to be absolutely fine in that game. They're going to be playing the Indianapolis Colts, not a defense that I'm particularly concerned about. They're a better run defense than they are pass defense. So I think you're going to see a lot of DJ Chark, Gardner Minshew stacking in DFS this week. So I like Minshew. I think I'm probably going to rank him as a top 15 quarterback for week one.
I like it. All right, let's finish up here with a guy rostered in just 8% of leagues. That's Tyrod Taylor. Obviously, we've got the long-term questions, whether he starts all year. I personally think that he is going to. We know he can use his legs. He's got a pretty soft opening schedule here if you are really trying to stream quarterbacks early. Bengals, Chiefs, Panthers, Bucks. So what do you think? Is Tyrod Taylor a guy, Scott, if you're in a deeper league, especially if you're waiting on quarterback as long as possible, is he a guy who you think you can stash, see how it plays out in the early weeks, or is it just not
in deeper leagues? Definitely. And in shallower leagues, I don't know that you can even hold on to him just hoping on that. It's got to be a situation where, like you said, you are using him as your starter. You're possibly streaming, and it's one of those leagues where a bunch of quarterbacks are rostered. Otherwise, it's really tough for me. This is a guy who hasn't, I wish I had the exact stat in front of me, but I don't think he's thrown over 420 or 430 passes in a single season in his entire career. I think that offense is gonna be on the ground a lot more than it has in previous years. Phillip Rivers was, like, last year, 592, I believe, attempts. I don't think Tyrod Taylor gets above 450 this year. I think that I think the offense is gonna be a lot more different than it was last year. So I don't think I can unless you're streaming him in those early weeks.
How about you, Tex?
Yeah, if you're a streamer, I'm down to stream him. He has a great opening schedule. It's not just week one against the Bengals either. And even if they do go with that run-heavy approach, I think it fits his game extremely well. He's not a big quarterback. Like, Cam Newton's someone I worry about his rushing upside falling off, because he was so big, taking so many hits, and like that adds up. Tyrod Taylor's like a very agile guy. He's looked good as far as I can see in training camp. I do watch the Hard Knock show, so I'm able to kind of see a little bit more from him. And he is moving pretty well, so I do think that early in the season, knowing that they don't have Mike Williams either, it's like I could see Tyrod Taylor rushing for 50 yards a game, and that's basically another passing touchdown. So with the matchup against the Bengals, I definitely think he's rosterable, and he's going to be a very popular streamer in week one for guys to take the late quarterback round approach.
All right, guys, let's finish up with a couple of mailbag questions here. We got these on Twitter tags after you posted that we'd be taking some. So apologies if I get the name wrong, but let's start off here from Matthew Griff. With the weird offseason, Scott, how hesitant are you to start rookies until they show production?
I guess it depends on the rookie. I'm pretty fine with the running backs just because they generally don't need as much and they can jump right in. Wide receivers may be a little different, but I don't know that there's a whole lot of starting, like a whole lot of rookie wide receivers that are shoved into roles where I'm super considering them week one anyway, or early in the season. At quarterback, I'm fine with Burrow because he's 100% the starter. So I guess my answer is really mixed there, and I'm okay with the running backs. I'm okay with Burrow. I'm probably holding off on the wide receivers.
How about you, Tex?
Yeah, I'm okay with the running backs, the wide receivers, quarterbacks, tight ends. So running backs is basically the one that I'm okay with, because those guys are locked into it. Jonathan Taylor, obviously, starting him. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you're starting him. But the wide receivers, those are the ones I'm taking a bit more caution with. CeeDee Lamb, there's matchups you have to go into and figure out all this stuff. You don't know the snap counts, what they're going to be. We've heard good things about these players. But we've never seen them in game action. We have to remember, these are not rookies like every single year. Rookies every year, they're able to go through training camp on a normal thing. they have off-season workouts. Then they come in, they play in four preseason games. Most of them don't play all four, but let's call it three preseason games. And it's like, that's at least a chance to get up to NFL speed. Right now, they've been practicing against their team. So it's like they've never really truly seen NFL competition at the highest level. So ideally in week one, you want to wait. But then as long as you see them out there for snaps, and if you see them produce, obviously you can do it. But the snaps are going to tell us a lot in week one, because some coaches might be hesitant to put a rookie on the field, like Van Jefferson, for example. A guy that's getting buzz in Rams training camp. I like the player, and if he gets the opportunity, great. But there's no way that you could trust him in week one to play over Josh Reynolds, because Reynolds obviously a veteran.
Okay, from Mr. Michael, not his real name, I'm going to bet. What's your process for deciding who to drop from your bench when you're working the waiver wire? And how long do you wait to give up on these late round draft picks that were supposed to be steals?
Wow. I think it's so much different for, so player dependent, different for each drop. I guess the first one would be if I'm holding a guy and if he did break out, would he actually make my starting lineup? What's realistic for that player would matter. I guess it would also be just how likely it is for them to get opportunity. Like, am I waiting on an injury, or is it a guy that, you know, is hurt but should climb the depth chart really quick? It really depends. I think the biggest question is, what would it take for this player to get opportunity? And how likely is that? Is probably the number one thing I would look at.
Yeah.
How about you, Tact?
Mine would be looking at your lineup. Do you need someone to start right now? It's like the whole Jalen Reagor conversation we had earlier in the show, where I said, you know, if you don't need someone right now, why are you in a rush to drop someone like that? You know that it was going to take some time for him to get back on the field. However, if you're in a situation, let's say in week one, one of your starting running backs goes down and you really don't have running back depth, that's when you have to cut bait on guys like that. That's when you have to let go. But truth be told, there should be guys on your bench that you're going to find out in week one. Obviously, you'll want to listen to Dan and I talk on the Sunday night show, which we're going to be live streaming that on YouTube this year.
Correct. Live. YouTube.com/FantasyPros.
Yeah, but we're going to be doing that. And I'm like, I'll let you guys know the snap counts that I come away with in those games and tell you basically players that, hey, we told you guys to draft them late to see what you had. You know, unfortunately, you're going to cut this guy, or I'll tell you, hang on to him. He's playing every single snap. There's going to be production. So it is a case by case basis for sure. But it all depends on your starting lineup and what you need.
All right, here's a good one, because this is factored into the way I've looked at least early season, you know, my early season outlook on players. From FF Junkie, given the abbreviated preseason, how important is continuity, returning players, head coach, offensive coordinator, etc., entering the season? Do you think it matters? And if it does, only in the first few weeks? And, you know, out of curiosity, if you know, which teams do you think are good in that regard and are bad in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think it matters. I think that was a widely talked about thing this offseason, that the veteran staffs would be in a better position, especially veteran staffs with strong leadership. I don't know how long that advantage lasts, if it's a few weeks or if it's many weeks, but I do think it matters.
Yeah, for me, I've been factoring it in. Tags, I'll let you answer here. For me, I've been factoring it in early in the season. Like, I think you are going to see some struggling from teams that have changed a lot from the offseason to now, because I do think the lack of preseason games, teams that sort of are really locked in, obviously the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Falcons, the Seahawks, the Titans, those teams that have continuity among their head coach, their offensive coordinator, their quarterbacks, their receivers, I think those teams are going to be a little sharper earlier in the season. What about you, Tex?
Yeah, I mean, when I talk to NFL players and coaches, that's who I want to know about this stuff. And we talked to Jeff Fisher on the podcast last week, and he talked about the difficulty, you know, in this offseason. You can give someone a playbook, but it's different. They're out there getting reps every single day, especially for these rookies. And I already mentioned, when you talk about the Panthers, they not only have a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator, they have a new quarterback, a new receiver that's added to the mix. There's so many moving parts there. Offensive lines, this stuff absolutely matters. Like the Dolphins, I think that they're going to have five new starters on the offensive line. The Jets might be the same thing. I've talked to Russ Tucker before, a former NFL offensive lineman, and he told me, he's like, that's an underrated thing that not enough people talk about, is that the continuity, because you start to say, like, basically you could spot something in the defense, you tap the lineman next to you, and like, you guys have this code, you understand what's going on, you have this communication, and it helps, you know, your running backs get more yards before contact, or your quarterback to get more time when they drop back. So it absolutely matters. So I mean, if you're having like a difficult time like trying to separate for week one decisions, always lean with the guy that has more continuity in his offense, because the other ones, there's just so much variance there.
All right, let's finish up with this one from Joseph Stewart. Obviously, it differs for every team, but what is your ideal bench structure? Do you try to have an equal number of running backs and receivers? Do you try to have a backup quarterback and tight end as well? Or are you legitimately just who's going to offer me the most upside, best guy available?
Well, in one quarterback leagues, I rarely take a backup unless it's a really good value. And this is one of those weird years where I feel like there's some really, really good values late. And with the COVID situation, it's possible your starting quarterback goes out. So I don't have a problem with that. I will say I generally have a second tight end. It's just one of those things I like. I think that many years, but definitely this year, there are so many tight ends that you can get later that are potential breakout tight ends. I kind of like having that guy, seeing if he breaks out. And if not, I mean, I could probably use him in a flex or whatnot. So I'm generally in one QB leagues, just one quarterback and two tight ends. But I have no problem with taking a second quarterback this year just because they're deep and it's an interesting year for COVID.
How about you, Tex?
Yeah, it depends on the strengths and weaknesses of my roster. So if I have a team where I'm starting, like there was one draft I did the other day. It was a 14-team league. I had Odell Beckham, Robert Woods, and I think it was like Juju or something like that as my three receivers. And I was like, wow, in a 14-team league, I'm stoked about that, right? Where it's like, if that's my strength, I need to load. That means I passed on some running backs in the middle rounds, and I need to load up on running backs on my bench. And vice versa, if you take three running backs, and let's say that you have, you know, Kenyon Drake, Miles Sanders, and James Conner, for example, or even Todd Gurley in your flex spot. And that means that you passed on some wide receivers, you're going to be a little lacking, or you took a tight end early. It's like, you have to be honest about your roster. And I think that's where most people struggle the most, is they want to say every area of their roster is a strength. No, you have to look at your roster and say, what's my biggest weakness, and kind of back that up. And if you have safe players, let's say that you drafted a Jarvis Landry, you need balance throughout your fantasy roster. You need to understand he's a safe player. He's not going to win you a fantasy championship. So if you have a safe player like that, toss someone with upside in your bench, like a Henry Ruggs, like a Jerry Judy. These guys are not safe at all, but you know that there's a chance of a breakout, and then you can always pop them in place of someone like Jarvis Landry, you know, who is a boring producer for your fantasy lineup.
100%. And can I add to that, Dan, that I answered the backup QB tight end part of his question, but he said equal number of running backs and receivers. I never do that. Kind of meshing with what Tag said, if I'm really strong at running back, I'll have less of them, and then I'll load up on wide receivers trying to get some of those to hit, or vice versa. If I'm really strong at wide receiver, maybe I only carry five or six or whatever, and then I load up on potential running backs that could hit because I'm weaker there. So I'm never equal. I load up on the one that I'm less strong.
Yeah, overriding principle in fantasy football, I think, is to play jazz and to never have sort of your set like, this is what I like to do, this is always what I do. It all depends. It always depends during the draft who falls to you, if your bench, how strong your roster is. So good stuff, guys. That is it for today's episode. Scott, as always, it is wonderful talking to you. I really look forward to having you back on again, and enjoy a couple of days here where you can kind of regroup and get ready for the season.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. I absolutely love coming on this show. You guys just do some awesome work.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Remember, you can find Scott over at Twitter at ScottFish24. Don't forget, you can check out our waiver assistant over at fantasypros.com/myplaybook, and go to fantasypros.com/offers. Check out our special offer for 6 months free of our Hall of Fame package. And before we go, let me say thank you to our sponsors. First, ButcherBox. Go to butcherbox.com/fantasypros. Get quality meats delivered right to your door, and 2 pounds of ground beef with every order for the life of your subscription when you use our code FantasyPros. Also, thanks to DraftKings. Millions of dollars are up for grab every single week. Download the DraftKings app. Use our promo code FantasyPros. Get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes when you make your first deposit. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow with another episode.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.